big.
I sort of assumed I'd be walking in the into the middle of a show.
No. We waited for you, mate. We love you.
Oh, cheers. Thank you.
This is the big show. We're here to discuss the week's technology news, all the big stories that have happened during the course of the week, and there's been loads. Yes, helping me to do it. Fantastic panel. What a panel this week. We've actually done pretty well. The Europeans are outnumbering the Americans for once on this show. Starting us off, Mr. Madden.
Hello, sir. Yes, I am here in the war zone, it appears.
So if you hear loud bangs, that's because Carl moved to Beirut in the 1970s.
One of our neighbours is letting off a load of fireworks at exactly the wrong time. So.
He's a bastard.
Firefox isn't tonight, is it?
No, it was
2 days ago.
Okay, because I know we do it a little before you guys. We do it at Halloween here in Ireland, and you guys do it a few days after us in Guy Fawkes. But that is all over now.
Right? Is that because you celebrate the fact that you had someone that was trying to bomb Parliament?
We just celebrate ghosts, I think.
It's an anti-English thing. Well, you wouldn't celebrate Guy Fawkes because you wanted him to succeed.
Technically true, yes.
Well, you wouldn't because you're Belgian.
Being of Belgian stock, I don't care.
Yeah, you would have found out who did it. That's a good joke there, actually. That's a really subtle joke.
Wasn't Guy Fawkes' name Guido, which means he was Flemish, which means he kind of was one of mine. Sorry.
Really? Guido Fawkes? No, Guido Fawkes writes for The Sun, mate. You got it all wrong.
No, he's down in history, this guy, but I'm pretty sure his very, very scary signature after they tortured him is Guido Fawkes.
Right, we shall Google that and look in Wikipedia, and Wikipedia, the oracle of all things, will tell us whether that's truth or bullshit. next to Carl, we've got Mr. Jeff Gamet.
Hey. And I want to point out that even though I'm in the United States, the gunshots are not coming from me.
They literally could.
There are so many at Madden's place that you could actually believe he was in Texas.
No, the gunshots were too quiet.
No, okay, maybe. How you been, dude?
Pretty good. And, just hanging out, having a drink, and I can't wait to figure out what story I'm going to come up with today.
And marveling at the lack of bandwidth that I appear to have because everyone's frozen.
Oh technology.
Well, I bloody hate doing this show. No, I don't. Beneath him, making a welcome return after a very, very long absence. Bart Bouchot, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing fine.
We should add you on sooner, mate.
Confirmed on the Wikipedias, it was indeed Guido Fawkes.
It was indeed. Back when she's saying he got experience when fighting with the Spanish, the explosives were prepared by Guy, brackets Guido Fawkes, a man with 10 years of military experience gained by fighting with the Spanish against the Dutch.
Oh, against the Dutch?
Yeah, in the Spanish Netherlands. Trying to make them non-Spanish
Netherlands. Against the Dutch, that means he was Protestant rather than Catholic. Oh, it's all very confusing.
It's not, it can't be him then, because the one that was him was a Catholic. And actually, just up the road from me, on the road between where the village I live and the next village, is a big field where all of his family camped while he carried on to London to do the deed. And once he was caught, they all came up here and they slaughtered them all that field. And they actually reckon it's haunted. And if you get people, there were stories of kids camping there and seeing ghosts at the end of their bed. So there you go. Our famous Flemish Irishman. Did you ever buy Belgian Dutch or Belgian or Belgian Irish or something.com.
I didn't.
You should.
I probably should have.
Belgian. That's what you said the last time I suggested it. BelgianIrish.com, I think it was.
Yeah, I must do. I have a memory like a sieve, though.
Tell me about it. As well. And last but by no means least, our ace reviewer, Righty, with Tiny Death Star today up on the blog.
Oh, love that thing.
You've got no work done this week, have you?
No, I've got nothing done at all. I'm in so much trouble.
Shh, don't tell the boss. You could buy Belching Irish, says Witten Rider, which would be equally apt, perhaps. Yeah. Did you like my review of the iPad Air cover?
That was classic.
I have got critical acclaim for that.
Succinct and to the point.
I'm not one for trying to sound like Mark Twain and come out with the shit that Syracuse does, so I just thought I'll get to the point. And there you go. I've done my review of the iPad cover on the review blogs. If you'd like to go and have a look at it, left-hand side, scroll down to review. It's there. It will inform you as to whether you should purchase or not, I promise you.
If it's anything like the iPad Mini cover, it's a pile of you-know-what.
Right, I'm saying no more. Go and have a read.
I'm going to go look at it right
Jeff, now. Jeff, I think you'll want me on staff after you've read it, I have to say. Okay, and I think it's succinct enough that it won't interfere with your participation in the show. You have a read while
awesome.
There you go, it's done. Go on, Jeff, I would take some pointers from you gladly on that.
Okay, so which category do I look under?
On the left-hand side, you'll see further down the bottom.
I see review. Review. I didn't scroll down far enough.
There we go.
And let's see, this tiny Death Star. Yeah, I don't think I would have to do much editing on that piece, and I agree with you. I'm not a fan of the smart cover either. I did, however, buy a smart case, and much to my surprise, I'm liking it.
No, I had it on the train, and I spent most of the train journey picking the damn thing up off the table where it fell over, because that last bit now is no longer long enough, so it pissed me off no end. 65 quid as well, got it back. 89 quid, I can get a Logitech one, which I know will work. So there you go.
Yeah, I tried it out in the Apple store before buying, and I'm glad I did, because I started typing, and my iPad just kept falling off of it. And I'm like,
they wouldn't let me do it. I said, can I have a look at it? No. Nope.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, see, the Apple store that I went to, they had one of each color, so I could try them all on if I wanted, and put them on my iPad. And then they also had a smart cover, so I could try that out, too. Which I thought was really great, because I tried them both out, realized very quickly the smart cover is
a piece
crap.
Of shit.
Yeah. And
have they changed it? Because I have a smart cover for my iPad 4, and
it won't work.
Oh yeah, it is dramatically different. The cover you have is great, mm-hmm. with
okay,
the whole
good.
Metal hinge and everything. It just breaks my heart that I had to give that up when I went to the Air.
The iPad 3 come 4 cover is the best cover they've ever made. And
oh, I love that, yes.
The magnets on it were great. You could hold the iPad up by holding onto the cover and the iPad would stay dangling underneath. And they've changed the magnets completely, so that cover no longer works with it, apart from the fact it's the wrong width anyway. It doesn't matter so much, because I could have trimmed that and solved that problem quite easily. What they've done is they've actually taken the magnets and they've changed all the magnet sides, so none of the old covers actually work. And I've got to say, I've sent out a few tweets, which a few people, the Apple fanboys, were going, oh, you can't tell them that they can't change it. You've made my Logitech keyboard landfill. You've made all the covers that I've ever bought for iPad landfill. You know, you call yourself an environmental company. You've just obsoleted everything that I ever bought to go with the iPad just because of magnets. I know it's the wrong size, don't get me wrong, but you could have kept the magnets the same.
Yeah, but in this case, I mean, they did keep the actual physical shape of the iPad the same for quite some time.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, absolutely.
Your iPhone 1 coverage didn't last nearly as long.
No, all right, fair point.
Yeah, it's true.
But we'll talk about that tomorrow on the Mac Show. What are you doing? You can come along for that as well. The week in tech, what's been happening then? Google has put a stop to Chrome password snooping. I read this story and I was just kind of like, no, that can't be true. Google will soon require Chrome users to sign in before they're able to see a list of the passwords that are saved in the browser. At the moment, all you have to do is go to chrome:/settings/passwords, and then you'll see a list of stored credentials in asterisk form. But if you select one and click the show button, it will show you it in plain text.
Who thought that was a good idea?
Well, hang on, how the hell?
What's wrong with these people?
Chrome has been out for what, 5 years, 4 years?
East.
For 4 years, you could watch all of the Chrome passwords by following that route.
Okay, that's the same true in Firefox.
It's
Unless
true in Firefox.
You have a master password set, none of those are encrypted. They're just sitting in a little DB file right in your computer. You don't encrypt your hard disk, you don't even need to boot it up.
You can take because they're saying if they've got basically access to your computer, then they've got access to everything anyway. That's what they initially said. I think they backed down on that a bit now.
Yeah, the problem, though, do we know if they've changed it that they're actually encrypted? Because the big problem was that they weren't encrypting them and that there's no way to. There's no such thing as a master password like Firefox has.
That's right. No, they're not. All they're going to do is now ask you on the app or on the Mac anyway, they're going to ask you to put in your user password, like for your Mac password, and that's it, to gain access. So it's pure security theatre.
Wow. Security theatre.
This is where Safari kicks butt, because Safari uses OS X's keychain to save your stuff securely, and Firefox users can set a master password if they care about security. Chrome users are the only ones who are sort of in trouble, and it seems they still are.
I've got to say, actually, in the browser wars, I went wholly away to Chrome, and I did everything in Chrome. I set my RSS feeds up in Chrome and all that kind of stuff. And then just lately, I've noticed, in the last 6 months, Chrome's become a bit of a dog. I mean, you start typing in it and the beach ball spins before it starts typing. Safari is pretty slick, yeah. And the Mavericks one now is beautiful.
Yeah. Has anyone noticed that Chrome's a dog in Mavericks as well?
Yeah.
It's horrible, isn't it? I've moved to Safari as well. It's horrible.
Right. Has anyone else had a problem with Chrome where if you spread the app over multiple spaces, it gets its knickers in an awful twist, and when you click on a window, it jumps you to a different space because it thinks that window's in another space and you can never get back to that window again?
Yeah, no. I don't think they've updated it from Mavericks. Is that Mavericks?
No, that was happening to me for the last 5 or 6 months.
Oh. So what you're talking about is if I open Chrome... Yeah, so I move it between windows.
Yeah, so I'm a big Spaces user, so I tend to have stuff distributed all over. And so I have programming in space 3 and photography in space 2, and sometimes I want a Chrome window in both spaces. And if you pick it up and you sort of bang it off the edge of the screen and let it skim over, randomly, usually after some time, Chrome will forget that it's in that space. And every time you click on that window, it'll push you over to the first space you open Chrome in. And you'll just see your window for a millisecond, then it'll swipe away. And you'll see your window for a millisecond, and then it'll swipe away, and you're just never going to get to that window again.
And you never get back to it?
No. The only thing you can do is collect all of Chrome into one space, and then spread them out again.
Right, okay. Well, that's interesting. So Chrome's a bit of a dog.
Yeah, it is.
We've passed
it. At the moment.
See, these are the kind of reviews that people want. They don't want this shit that Syracuse comes out. They just want this... You know,
it's a bit slightly different.
That's all they want. I've had massive reviews in my review saying critical acclaim, nay.
Yes. The critical acclaim is nearly more words than you used.
Maybe just critical. Windows 8 has got to double-digit market share across Europe. At the moment, it is... it's not. It's nearly. It's 9.8% of all the phones in Europe are Windows 8. But it's into 11.4% here in the UK. Yeah, it's growing. See, you all said that I was an idiot, but I'm ahead of my time.
Well, they did say that, but they weren't talking about this. It was just, I've said too much, I'm sorry.
Okay, thanks, man.
Is that big in Europe, isn't it?
It's saying that the 9% of all smartphone sales across the five biggest European markets, Germany, Spain, Italy, France and the UK are at 9.8%, which still leaves Microsoft OS well behind Android at 72% and iOS at 14%, but makes an impressive 5.2% point rise in sale from the previous year. In the UK, however, it takes 11.4% of the total market share in sales.
Yeah, but that's sales, so it's going to take quite a few years for that to ripple its way up the usage. Because there's a lot of iPhones sold over the last couple of years.
Yeah, but they're saying in the last 18 months they've actually doubled their market share within 18 months.
Why would you buy a Windows phone and not use it?
I know a guy who did.
Okay, that's one example.
It was old iPhone 4.
That's not a trend in Europe, though, Bart, be fair.
But no, but it takes time. Like, the iPhones I bought 3 years ago are still in existence. They're still being used. So even if people love their Windows phones immensely, and let's assume they do, and they're going to keep them for 3 years, it's going to take them 3 years till they can keep them for 3 years. So like if you just randomly snap the population, what phone are you using this second? It's not 10% using Windows phone.
It's 10% of sales, so you would have said...
Yeah, so it'll take a few years to ripple up to 10% usage.
Oh, okay. All right, I get you.
Now, that 10% sales, is that actual literal sales to customers, or is that product pushed into the channel?
I pay a lot of money to have product pushed in my channel, but it's...
As one does.
You will have to ask Kantar World Panel, because they're the people that did the... The survey, I'm afraid.
Yeah. Well, it's actually because the kind of culture of mobile phones and contracts are bigger, because the biggest market for Windows phones is Italy. they haven't got a contract kind of culture that we have. It's more of a buy it right and get your contract where you kind of feel that you get the best deal. So I think people kind of look at the Windows phone for like 200 euros opposed to 600 euros for an iPhone. And I think people are buying it on the outright value of buying it, you know, contract free.
I think the increase in the camera phone has given them a real good boost, definitely. You know, the 1020, I think, has probably done an awful lot for sales. And to a certain degree, maybe people are now holding off and waiting for the 1520 next month to really kind of let it take hold.
Yeah, but the one thing I heard the other day is one thing that gets shown to users when they go and buy it is the kids corner, haven't they, on Windows Phone?
Right.
Which is where you can swipe across and you can have it just like app for your kids, can't you?
I got to say...
People who aren't that savvy, who are just looking for a phone, that's Facebook and the internet, you're going, well, you can swipe this and your kids can use it. That's a big kind of differentiator, I think.
I've been on Windows Phone now for 2 months nearly, and I can't say that I've missed anything that's in iOS other than Skywalk, which I can still use when I've got my telescope out, and the one I've really lost on a day-to-day basis is Downcast. But I found a decent podcast lounge, which is a decent podcast catching app. Just a bit harder to add feeds to it, that's all, than Downcast. But
Are the Twitter apps any good?
I've got Twabbit, and I've got to say, I like it. It's a very clean user interface. It's very good, and it's fairly easy to swap between accounts as well. So is it as good as Tweetbot? No, but it's not a far-off second for me, definitely.
Have you found a good YouTube app?
MetroTube. That works MetroTube. Really well, yeah. Really good.
No, because I have a friend with a Windows phone who's having kittens for not being able to play YouTube videos. So
oh, no, MetroTube.
MetroTube. Band up. Noted.
I think it's MetroTube. Well, I'll be with you in a sec. This is good audio, isn't it? Yeah, MetroTube, that's the one. And you can get Netflix on it and all sorts. Really good. There you go. Very happy. These are only the warm-up stories. Western Digital, now if you swap to Mavericks and you woke up one morning and found out that your 4-terabyte and 6-terabyte drives were called now instead of what you'd formatted them as, Western Digital issued a statement saying, whatever you do, don't update to Mavericks, because they're looking into why it's happened. They're urgently investigating reports, apparently. So there you go. If you've lost your digital data this week to Mavericks, that's why.
I have a Western Digital drive, and it still has all my data.
I have I have four of them sitting on the desk, and they're FireWire connectivity. Whether that makes a difference or not, I don't know.
But are you using the built-in program that comes with the
drive? God, no.
I don't use any programs that come from Western Digital or anyone else.
We got an email around work. It's you know the built-in backup program that comes with Western Digital drives? It's that conflicts with Mavericks. So if you're using that conflicts with Mavericks, and that then wipes the drive. So if you've got a clean drive that you've kind of formatted yourself, you're fine.
Yeah,
I would never do anything else. If you've
inbuilt one, then yeah, you're screwed.
I have an innate distrust of any software that helps me store data on drives that's issued by the drive manufacturer.
Yeah,
I never used it, and I always hated it.
That's what's called the first thing.
Yeah, I mean, you like SanDisks. If you get the little SanDisk, it's got SanDisk multisaver and that kind of stuff in it. You're like, that goes straight off as soon as I possibly can. Twitter had its IPO. It's been floated. Yes, it's out there. And apparently, unlike Facebook, it's actually doing rather well. Its share price has jumped up 73% to $45.15 by midday today. Which is huge. That's really good, because I thought they were going to get an absolute pillorying. The company was initially valued at $18.1 billion. Now, with the Twitter price increase, it's now gone to $31
billion. Oh, they always go straight up, though, when they release these tech companies. And then by the end of the day...
Unless your name's Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. That plummeted. But this will plummet as well, I reckon, towards the end of the day. Once all the people who know what they're doing make their money... They'll dump the stock, and then everyone else gets left with the problem.
So, do you think they've gone for the Mar and Par investors again, and they're not going to get stung?
Well, that's what they do. That's how they make their dosh, isn't it? That's their business.
It'd be interesting, actually, if we can track that during the course of the show and see what's happened.
But the other thing is, Twitter still hasn't proven it can make any money. It's never made any money.
No, I don't see how it's going to either.
And the only way it can make money, effectively, is really to sell advertising. Or to charge people to use the surface. Two things that will probably absolutely destroy it.
But it, I mean, it's always
sell our personal data.
People are very. Oh yeah, that's true.
But people, you get them destroyed.
People are very savvy at switching off from things that they can clearly see that are promoted. You know, there's a lot in you keep. I mean, if you get links through, and you know, you get someone who sent you a click here for this, you instantly just block them and you report them as spam. If they just send you a link and you don't know them, you instantly just block them and report them as spam. I've probably got a few people that I've pissed off by just blocking them because they sent me just a link. But if I don't know you and all you're sending me is a link, you're going to get blocked.
Oh boy!
But you still can't send links in DMs at the moment. I don't know what that bug is.
Yeah, you can't send photos in DMs anymore either.
Hey. How Which means Google... it's back to sexting for all of us. What the hell?
Yeah.
How come Google can make a living selling promoted content?
Don't know.
No one else.
Maybe that's because that's what they did at the start.
Yeah, they did it right from the beginning, didn't they? So you sort of like were adopted to it. You're used to it straight from the, you know. But Twitter gave you this wonderful service where you could just tweet and share your information instantly with your friends back in the days, you know, what you were having for breakfast, for example. But there was no advertising forced on you. And everyone runs into this problem eventually. All these social media sites run into the problem of, well, how do we make money? We've got all these users. Now we need to like finance it somehow. And even Instagram, those damn fireworks, even Instagram is like struggling because they now want to put adverts into the streams of their users and people don't like it.
I think people aren't going to be worried about the fireworks so much, particularly if they're watching on video, mate, as the fact of watching you at 2 frames a second.
Hey.
Jesus Christ. Wait, I've got a shit internet connection tonight. I do apologize.
So does this then come down to the fact that what you really need to be successful is to have your business model figured out before you start?
Yes. People hate change.
It's crazy talk.
It's crazy. I mean, absolutely crazy talk, yeah.
People hate
We lost another serve this week called Everpix. I don't know if anyone ever used Everpix.
That was a sad loss.
Yeah, it was a fantastic service. So what it done is you subscribe to the service and you paid a small amount of money. It was really small. And then you'd point all your photo apps to it, like Instagram, you could point to it, and Flickr and iPhoto and your phones and things like this. And it would all amass your photographs in one place. And it would like put them in chronological order. It would send you a message every day saying, this is what you did a year ago. This is what you did 2 years ago.
Madam, just give up. Let them in the front door.
It was a fantastic
Tell
service.
You what, those Jehovah's Witnesses now, they're so persistent.
See, they really don't like me ignoring them anymore. But no, it was a wonderful service. Unfortunately, of course, the model they built, they couldn't sustain it with the amount of subscribers they have, so it's gone to the wall. And it's a shame.
But isn't that a natural process of evolution? It's, you know, it's Darwinian.
Well, it is, absolutely right. But the problem I think Everpix had is the fact is that I say the name and no one's heard of it.
No, I mean, I didn't until they went under.
Exactly.
The first I heard was Don McAllister bemoaning their demise. Well, that's an interesting service. I might have liked that.
Exactly. And the only reason I knew it existed is because I was watching an episode of Twit and Leo just happened to mention it in a throwaway comment. And I thought, what's that? And I went and checked it out and subscribed. It was a brilliant service.
Dropbox is a success and Evernote are a success. Did they both have their business model from day one?
Well, didn't you have to, they gave you a certain amount of free space, Dropbox, and then you had to pay for additional space.
And it's been like that from day one, hasn't it? It was never just all you can eat.
No, I mean, once people found out how useful the service was, they were willing to give them the extra bit of money in most cases.
I'm a pro Evernote subscriber, but I don't remember if that was always there or if that was an add-on.
I believe that was there from the beginning. Or no, it wasn't there at the beginning, but they told you it was coming.
Okay, so no one had any expectations.
That there was going to be a paid service from day one.
But also it gave you additional benefits, didn't it, for the paying?
Right, right.
Oh, yeah.
It allows you to save so much more a day or something. I can't quite remember.
You can save more, it'll do OCR on the server side, and there's a whole bunch of more features. There's a little icon that says premium in my menu bar that apparently if I click on it, it'll tell me all the cool stuff. But all I know is I have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of notes, and I don't have a little bar telling me how many I can use. I can just use what I want.
Gotcha.
Windrider in the chat
room. Yeah, so that's a valid service.
Windrider in the chat room says, never picks. Belt says $49 a year. Nice one, says Paulums. Yeah. They didn't advertise, apparently. No kidding. There is a certain element of this that you kind of like, do you know what? I came up with a shit business model. I didn't tell anyone. And do you know, I failed. Can't believe it.
I had a shop with no sign out the front and no one came in.
Yeah.
But Twitter's got the opposite problem. It is well known, but they still don't make no money. Any money, I should say. That's probably poor grammar, sorry.
But they're the ultimate, I call them digital underpants gnomes. Step one, get users. Step three, profit. At no point do they ever think about step two.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's a fair point. And last but by no means least, in the opening stories, before we even get into the show, which has taken half an hour already, Huawei says that it's going to throw hundreds of millions at 5G research over 5 years. Now, I don't know if I speak for the rest of the panel here, but I certainly speak for myself. Number one, I would have liked to have actually got the 3G speeds you frigging advertised. Number two, I couldn't give a shit about 4G because I've never got the 3G speeds that you advertise. And number five, I don't want 5G, thank you very much. Because I haven't got 4G yet, and you still haven't given me the frigging speeds that you advertise for 3G.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm 2Gs back. Get the 3 working before you worry about the 5.
2G? Mate, I'm lucky I'm not on fucking dial-up. The speed that 3 is at times. Excuse me.
Wasn't someone, one of the telcos, wrapped over the knuckles today? Was it Vodafone? Because they haven't met their 3G rollout that they said they were going to.
They haven't met the 3G rollout?
Yeah. they missed it by about 1.4% or something. It's some really tiny figure, which they say we can easily do. But then they're saying, like, you need to, like, Ofcom is now saying, now you need to concentrate on roads and then train lines. Because it's right, if you drive, drive around the M25 all the time, and there's far sections where you can't get any signal.
Well, no, they're speed-based, though, as well. See, that's the. I had a conversation with. I met a lovely chap on the train last night, Tony.
There's no speed on the M25, dude.
Okay, fair point, maybe. Now, I met a guy named Tony on the train yesterday. Really good chat with him. Nice bloke. And he was struggling to get connection. I said, you've got to get it when you're in the stations. Get all your dump of emails in and then realise you're not going to get sod all until you pass through a station next time. And it is about speed as well.
You don't have free Wi-Fi on trains.
You do have free Wi-Fi on trains.
Okay.
But it doesn't.
For a moment, I thought it doesn't work. Oh, then Ireland is ahead of the world, because our free Wi-Fi works on our trains.
Well, it works in patches, and then it'll come, and you'll get an email that'll pop up, and then you try and send a reply, and it goes, no connection. And it seems to be based on speed. If they slow people down, you suddenly get connection, but then when it speeds up again, you lose it. And I've got to say, with things like Siri, if I've tried to use Siri, if I'm over 50 miles an hour, Siri is pointless. Utterly pointless.
Thank you, Bob.
It's something to do with the speed and the exchange across the cellular towers, so I think. But there you go.
Oh, so the answer to Siri comes to a cell tower a few miles behind you?
I guess so. But, I mean, Siri was crap anyway.
On a platform that says, the temperature is 38 degrees. And they're like, what the hell was that? And it's Siri trying to send you a message.
For a request that you asked for 3 weeks back.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. The Week in Tech, then. So what stories have you brought? Let's start off with you, Monsieur Madden. Mid-yawn, I got you perfect there, dude. I do apologise.
I was coughing.
Oh, with mute. Good lad.
I'm going to go with the driverless cars in Milton Keynes.
Tell us more.
So this was on the BBC earlier tonight. Apparently, sir, they're going to... What is it? The UK town is going to get 1.5 million made available from the government, because they got loads of money. And they're going to put these pods in Milton Keynes. I'm trying to see how many they've actually used. 100? I think it's 100.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
£1.5 million pound project. 20 pods running on lanes separated from pedestrians could be operational by 2015.
Hmm. So the idea is you climb into these pods and you get taken to wherever you want to go. And while you're driving, you can check your email and play a game or read the newspaper. And
so you're not driving, though?
No.
You're being driven.
Yeah.
Yes, while you're being, like... I've got them at Heathrow, actually. They've got these little pods that take you from the car park into the terminal and run along this little track. It's not exactly the same sort of thing, but they can only go about 15 miles an hour or so. 12 miles per hour.
That might be a legislative thing.
As a pedestrian, I think 12 miles an hour sounds fast enough for the robots to be coming by.
Yeah, yeah, I can run at 12 miles an hour, and you'd want to move.
You what? You expect us to believe that?
I can. I can run faster than 12 miles
an
hour.
For how long?
Honest.
For how long?
Oh, 20 yards, dude. I mean, it's steady on.
Well, that works here, because you'd be stuck behind a tractor. So that actually works here in Norfolk.
Well, with Milton Keynes, it'll be... Because there's so many roundabouts in Milton Keynes, it'll be trying to get around the roundabouts up here. But it takes us a step nearer to, like, Google cars, and I really do want a Google car. I want to be able to come out of any pub in the Gland and just say, here we home, and it'll drive me home. That is my ultimate wish.
As long as it doesn't need voice recognition.
Well, you do know... You want to go home. You do know, you do know you can do that with a horse, don't you?
Very good point.
Horses are excellent at finding their way back home. So all you do is you get a horse and cart, you tie it up outside the pub, you get yourself shit-faced, then you climb in, take the horse off the restraints, and the horse will just go home. Failing that, you need a flock of courier pigeons, so...
Yeah, I really want to be riding a horse through Tottenham at night.
No, there's a pub near us called the Griffin, and there was a famous, infamous lad who used to come. He was an old fart who just got pissed all the time, one of the local farmers. And he used to turn up in a horse and cart, and he'd go inside, he'd get absolutely wrecked. He'd come out, and he wouldn't even sit in the driver's seat just for, like, the pretense of it. He would get in the back of the thing, and he got to the point he didn't actually tie the horse and cart up anymore. The horse would just wait for him to come out, wait till it felt him fall in the back of the thing, and then it would just go home, and that was it.
I don't see what we have a drink.
That's awesome.
It is awesome.
Yeah, my uncle used to have a horse that used to slug back bottles of beer in one go. I wouldn't do it with him.
No.
He'd need a horse to get the other horse.
Now, Bart, have you got the feed on, mate?
I got the who what?
Are you watching our feed on Justin?
No, because my internet's not up to much.
Oh,
if you want to see me, I'm not going to see you.
Well, it's all right, because Batwench has sent a picture in saying that you look like her mate Pete. And I've got to say, dude, it's like a mirror.
Okay, that's kind of weird. So definitely not Pete.
See, he's seen it.
Yeah.
There we go.
He's right.
I need to email the picture to you.
It's like the stoic version of you.
There we go. Wow. Dude, you and Pete were separated at birth.
I need to shave my beard or something.
You have a long-lost Welsh brother.
Welsh? Oh, wow. Flemish, Welsh,
Irish. FlemishWelshIrish.com. That's what you need.
It must have been quite a party.
BelgianIrishTaffy.com. That's what you need. Yeah.
Harder and harder to spell.
I want one of those pods to take me everywhere, mate. I got to agree. I think I need more than 12 miles an hour. But I would love to have a car that would take me to London. I could sit in the back. I could get all my stuff in, and I could sit and type and work. And I said, go ahead.
Like a two-tier road system. Like, you know, a lane for the robots.
Yeah.
And a lane for people who just...
Well, now here's the question, Bart. In your utopian world, which traffic has to cross the other traffic to get off?
Well, the robots can be trusted not to run into each other a lot more, so they wouldn't need, you know, primitive things like traffic lights. They could just zip through each other.
Yeah, but the problem is, if you're on a motorway, someone's going to get on and off at the off-ramp. So would you want the human vehicles passing through the robot lane to get off, or would you want the robots passing through the human lane to get off? Or are both equally bad?
I think both are a problem, because if you're in the perfectly safe robot and you have to cross over the silly human line, I'd feel bad if I was in the robot. And if I was the kind of person who was a Luddite and I was driving along in my car, I'd feel awful about the robots coming in.
As long as they don't get road rage.
Yeah. Then you're into iRobot in cars. That was a quality film. iBookery says Ewan needs a self-driving donkey, not a car. I was actually talking to the wife the other day. I was saying we should go away and holiday as a family, all four of us. I said, but the problem is the little family car we've got is not big enough, so I'd love to take the van as well because we can pack more stuff in there. But I want to make a desk in the back of my van. And when we drive away on Aldi, I want her and the kids in the front, and I can sit in the back and do work while she's driving there.
How'd that go over?
Yeah, I was on the spare bed for weeks. Good story, mate. I think that automated transportation is a way forward, certainly with things like buses and stuff like that, and trams and those kind of things. Is it the Shanghai Metro? Doesn't have drivers?
Which Docklands as well.
All completely automated. Whole thing.
No kidding. That's cool.
Is Docklands DLSR? Well,
Yeah, I mean, they never used to. When it first started, they never had drivers in, and people started getting a bit antsy, so they put people in the trains to pretend they were driving, but they're not.
Oh, right. I didn't know.
And they don't do it. Now you can sit at the front of the train and pretend you're driving it yourself.
Docklands Light Railway. I did some work for them. Nice bunch of people. Very good. Good story, pal. Jeff, what did you bring?
I brought a story that's actually kind of a crossover between the comic show. Mm. Marvel Comics has announced that they have a deal with Netflix where they're going to bring four different series, live action series, to Netflix, all original content. And then it culminates with a mini series that ties all the four series together. And so what they're doing is they're going to do a series about Daredevil, another one about Luke Cage, another one about Jessica Jones, and then the fourth one is Iron Fist. So they are characters that aren't as well known outside of the comic book fan world, but they're all very interesting characters. But that's not the point. The point is Netflix is getting this deal. It's not going to one of the regular networks. It's not going to HBO or Showtime. It's going to Netflix. And and I think what this says is that Marvel is looking at how they can most effectively produce the shows that they want to make. And it doesn't involve regular networks. Mm. And the new wave. If you look at Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a great concept.
Done really badly.
Yeah, because it's on regular TV. If it was on Netflix or HBO or Showtime,
there'd still be crap acting.
Well, okay, there's that, but they could actually do a lot more with the stories.
Episode 3 was like watching an episode of Spy Kids. And then Sky gets her dress wet. And she's running around in a wet dress for a few minutes. I'm kind of okay. Well, I can carry on watching this. That's fine. And then in the next episode, someone said to me, yeah, but they're going for that family-friendly kind of feel. I'm like, oh, okay, I get that. I understand. So what's the next episode? They said penis in the middle of it. So I'm figuring, well, where's the family-friendly bit? And then this week, it's Sky gets down to her bra and panties that are matching, which look really great on her. She should put it for Victoria's Secrets. And probably they were Victoria's Secrets. But I'm just kind of like, I can't get past it. It's like watching Spy Kids.
They're not going for the children market. They're going for the teenage market.
Progressive.
That's what it is.
So I want to go back to what Ewan said, because I stopped watching after episode 3. So in episode 4, she does what?
No, episode 3, she gets her dress wet.
Really? I saw that. Yeah. I stopped watching it.
And then in episode 4, they say the word penis. And then this week, she's wearing a bra and panties, and she has sex with someone.
Okay, I'll see you all next week. Okay.
And there was something else happening this week, but I kind of got lost and forgot about it.
And I've only seen the first 3 episodes. And what I saw was potential for some really cool shows.
I think your idea of the thing is great as long as they do it properly. And the rollout through networks is brilliant because you get it all at once.
Right. And they're not restricted by the sort of things that regular television channel or broadcasters are going to get all hung up on. And so they can do a lot more. And these are characters that are living and working and doing their thing in a really crappy, dangerous part of New York. So it's not the clean glass, bright walls like in the Avengers movie where the aliens invade New York. This is...
spoiler alert.
Oops, sorry. This is drug dealers and rusty hypodermic needles and pee in the gutters and all of that kind of stuff. And the grungy crap that you probably would really have to deal with if you wanted to be a true vigilante, because you need to go where the problems are to fix things, and so you go to the worst parts of town.
State sanctioned vigilantism. That's what we're lacking. Steph the NSA. We need our vigilantes licensed by the state.
And they should wear flamboyant costumes.
Oh, man, and ever. Designed by Chanel.
Well, of course.
I've got to say, I would get on far better, I think, with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. if they got rid of the two Basil expositions that are the science geeks. They're utter shite. Leave Agent Coulson alone. He's a god, says Batwench. She also says that she thinks that Sky is a little too light in the top half to be a lingerie model. So, but if she's using comparative reasons for that, then that's not a good comparison. So there we go. Licensed privateers, says Belt. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Me and the wife love the Caped Crusader-y type movies. Anything that's Marvel or DC Comics when it comes out, we love watching them. So it really kind of galls me if I look at something and go, I really love that style of thing, but I'm not enjoying watching this. You know? So, I'm sorry, Jeff. When's the next comic episode out? Comic show episode out?
We will be recording, I believe, on Monday.
Good one. Have we got Carlos in yet, Scarer?
Not yet. We are working on the scheduling for that.
We need to get that in, because he's the man.
I believe that is soon.
When the man who invents Judge Dredd says yes, you don't wait. I'm worried that we're not going to get him. I'm worried.
Oh, don't worry.
It took me ages to find him as well.
Don't worry. No. It's all good.
Righty, what did you bring for us, mate?
Obviously... From what I remember of last week's show,
not much.
I kind of brought the tone down with the talking about the crypto virus. Obviously, quite a nasty thing. But has anyone heard of the bad BIOS virus?
Oh, go on.
Well, I only found about this week, and obviously because I work in IT and security is kind of is my thing. The bad BIOS virus has kind of hit Twitter in the last couple of weeks. It's kind of blown up a lot. And it's over the last 3 years, there's a chap, and please forgive me if I get his name wrong, is Dragos Rui, I think. But 3 years ago, he was setting up, he's a security expert. He does a lot of security kind of conventions and things in America. And he was doing a kind of corporation build, and he had two machines infected with the virus, which were updating the firmware. And he thought, well, you know, we've got a virus, that's fine, we'll wipe the machines. And we'll try again. Immediately, he formatted the machines, and they were infected again. And he thought, that's a bit weird, because they weren't connected to a network. They went on LAN or they went on Wi-Fi. He thought, that's a little bit strange. Mm. So basically, what he did is he did a bit of investigation, couldn't get to the root of it. You know, registry keys were being changed. Firmware was being updated. Couldn't boot from from CD drive. He thought it was a bit strange. So over the last 3 years, he's rebuilt his entire network. He's rebuilt all his servers, rebuilt all of his network. But his network's still being infected. He's isolating machines, and he's finding they're still being infected. So they're going back, and they're removing the LAN card, they're removing the Wi-Fi card, the Bluetooth, the GPS. And the machines are still being infected. And what they call air gaps between the machines that they have. Obviously, there's no network connection. But the machines are still getting a virus. And what they've found is, at the last point that they'd stripped everything out of the machine, the last thing they stripped out was the speaker and the microphone. And what they've found is they're actually being infected kind of via sound waves.
The sound waves weren't for infecting. It was for infected machines to continue to communicate, to exfiltrate data from a system that's isolated from the network. So you can infect the machine through the speakers, but if you have an already infected machine and you remove that machine because it's, say, controlling a nuclear power plant or something and it's not physically connected to the internet, it can sneak to another infected machine over the air effectively, and that way continue to exfiltrate data or continue to take commands.
Are we talking like ultra high frequency stuff that you can't hear, or
Well, Bart will probably, because I thought Bart might kind of but the last few days I listened to an interview with the chap who kind of, I think he's doing a presentation at the weekend, isn't he, about kind of revealing his findings, but it's probably scary stuff. Because a lot of people are calling hoax on it, aren't they?
Because he posted
There's a lot of misinformation in the rounds as well, and there's also a lot of people who want to make something a big deal because there's money in headlines. So yeah. I think there's certainly a misunderstanding about the concept that they're infecting these machines magically through speakers, and that's not what's being claimed by the researcher. Really, I think it's important. At the moment, we don't really have enough information to have an intelligent conversation to a large extent. So I'm really
which is what
forward.
The chat room's saying. To be fair, they're saying that no one's been able to replicate his research and the findings. No one's been able to verify anything yet. So
yeah. So when he gives this talk, hopefully he will have the proof. And if he delivers, then the security community can react in a sensible way. Because at the moment, it's one guy saying pretty fanciful stuff. And because of what's happened with Stuxnet, no one's prepared to say that's impossible. Because before we found Stuxnet, people would have said that's impossible and looked like idiots when Stuxnet was found. Mm. But everyone's kind of saying, that sounds a bit interesting, but no one's going to say no. So they want the guy to deliver his talk and then we can talk, I guess.
But it doesn't sound like it couldn't happen either, though. You know, it is a pretty valid theory, though, as well. Because he's sending power. Well, his claim in the interview that I heard, he's sending PowerShell commands on this low level frequency, isn't it?
Yeah. So the idea of two infected machines communicating through a speaker on a mic, that's not impossible, and that's actually kind of that's quite clever, and you kind of have to admire that kind of thinking. But the notion that you could just shout at a machine and infect it without it being infected first through some other vector, that seems fantastical.
Hmm.
And I don't think he's claiming that, but I do think a lot of news outlets are making it appear he is.
Yeah, because he's been up by some security experts, but it does kind of open up the forum of what is the next kind of infection that we're going to get, If this is true or not, it opens up the floodgates that this could be an infection that, if it is, say, it is a hoax, it is something that could actually happen, isn't it?
Well, I'm reading.
I think the scarier bit is the getting into the BIOS. It's like that basically means that the only way to recover from this is probably to bin your computer.
Mm. Yeah, because it was OS X, Windows, and Linux, wasn't it? It infected all of them, didn't they?
Well, it was OS X, it was FreeBSD, which, of course, OS X is a BSD, so they're very related. And then there was Linux as well, yeah, and Windows. So it was a lot of different OSs. If he has found, the next Stuxnet, Stuxnets 2, it sounds so sophisticated, you'd be thinking government actor, probably.
It's got to be state-sponsored if it's that high level, I think.
Seems plausible anyway, yeah, it seems likely.
See, I find that quite interesting. I've just gone to a link that someone's put in the chat room at Overclockers, and it's saying, the guy there is saying, first and foremost, the very idea that there is a malicious BIOS load that can escape air gapping and is portable is beyond laughable. I don't care what you think, BIOS code is not portable, period. Oh, sure, you can have a common source for multiple motherboards, but every single model, revision, and minor version requires you to complete UEFI, elements best case. That's before you get into changes into UEFI libraries and shells. A lot of the comments that go on afterwards, there's one bloke finishes up with, I read the first line and realised this bloke was clinically insane. But from what you guys are saying, there's more credence to this than they're giving here.
I think some of them are going to have egg on their face.
Really?
I do, because I think there's something going on. I'm just not sure if everything we're hearing is quite going on. But the concept, it's not impossible. If you get malware on a machine, it can tell what motherboard is in there, and it can then deliver an appropriate payload for the appropriate motherboard it finds. It may not be able to infect everything, but particularly if you take the OS X line, Apple don't make many models of computer. It wouldn't actually be that much work to have a different variant of your malware for each version of the Mac. Say you do, 5... five iMacs or whatever, five MacBook Pros, you get lots of people. So I wouldn't say never. I'd be very
careful. That's quite interesting. No, I mean, they were talking about the fact that they reckon that this can hop from PC to Mac and Mac to Mac and PC to PC, which that bit sounds a little bit more far-fetched, perhaps. But
yeah, but all you have to do in the BIOS is keep enough of a presence to just reinfect yourself. So you could just imagine that all the code would have to do would be to say, copy its main bits into the master boot record on hard drive 1, and then just put enough into the BIOS that says, when I boot up, take the stuff out of the master boot record and run it. And reinfect the machine, basically. So I wouldn't say impossible. Hard.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. We should wait and see.
Following on from the kind of crypto viral thing last week, it's kind of terrifying the way that these kind of things infect, you know. It's, like we said last week, it's mainly down to the user clicking on something, doing something stupid to infect the machine, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's a comment in the comments column of that guy that's saying, you know, do bear in mind Stuxnet. So it's reinforcing... everything that Bart's saying there as well.
Well, I think this is a case of what's scary here is how sticky this malware is. So we're still not saying that it's getting in through spectacular means. It could be coming in on something as simple as a thumb drive. You know, you go to a booth somewhere at a presentation, they give you a free thumb drive, you stick it in your hose. That's not an unrealistic situation. Definitely. Was it the British government that told all of their MPs before, or all of the cabinet before going into meeting to leave their iPads at the door in case they'd been infected?
They burst into a cabinet meeting in the last couple of weeks and removed an iPad, didn't they? They thought it had been infected.
That's what I thought I heard in the news. But
yeah, it was out the Angela Merkel thing. They actually stormed in and I can't remember the chap who it was. They actually stormed in and removed his iPad, and apparently they've now got a lead box where they put all the devices in before they go to meetings.
And a tin hat to wear just while they're doing it.
The NSA, they got a lot to answer for.
It wasn't about the fact that the NSA might be in the iPad, it was because he was cruising for Angela Merkel porn. that was what was doing it.
We don't want to do that.
That's just sick.
Holy shit, no. That could ruin an entire seating session of Parliament. If it got passed round. You know, the people's minds are wandering and...
That's a mental virus. That's
she a is a sexy woman.
Nothing to you.
Bart, what have you got for us, mate?
I have Patent Armageddon. Back in 2009, a company that was once big called Nortel went a little bit bankrupt, as in completely. And to make some money back, they sold off their patents. And Google wanted them, and so did everyone else. And everyone else won and Google lost. So everyone else being they call themselves the Rockstar Consortium, it's Rockstar Bidco. And so it's Apple and Microsoft and RIM, who were still relevant then, and Ericsson and Sony and others got together and they bid more than Google bid and they got the patents. All 6,000 of them. And everyone's kind of been waiting for the other shoe to drop on that. And, they dropped. This consortium is suing Google for 6 patents, including one that predates the founding of Google, which, let me just get the wording here.
So it makes you wonder why Google was so intent on wanting to buy them. When you
add Microsoft. Yeah, so where's that one-liner here? Basically, the patent basically appears to cover the idea of matching ads to search results, which is going for the jugular.
That is Google.
That is Google's, literally Google's bread and butter. That's what they make their money from. So they're not, you know, this is high stakes game they're playing here. I am not a fan of the US patent system. I think it is patently broken. But I also don't think you can criticize any one company for playing the game because Apple are sued all the time. And if you are a publicly traded company of a duty to your shareholders, you can't not play this game because if you don't play the game, you're going to get shafted. I just think the system is broken and it makes me really cranky that companies are wasting all this money going after each other in this way instead of just out-competing each other. But that's, I don't know if that's something you want to go into.
If you're looking for a good podcast, Law in Action is an excellent podcast that comes out from the BBC and they actually specifically spoke about patent trolling and measures to curb patent trolls because Europe is setting up its own patent court. The patent system, we've said a number of times on this podcast, is utterly broken because you register a concept. You never even have to make the damn thing. You just come up with this idea of changing something on something else. That's not it.
This isn't patent trolling because these companies are all making money at these things. Like a patent troll is, I believe the technical term is a non-practicing entity.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is a company that make nothing and just sue people who make something.
Yeah.
At least, I'm not sure it's much of an at least, but at least in this case, these are all companies in an industry together.
No, so because what they've done is they've purchased a patent from someone else and they're not continuing the doing aspect of that patent. They're just suing someone for it. That's trolling.
But no, Nortel were a telco and these companies are all in the telecommunications business.
Yeah, but they're not actively using the patents for which they're suing other people for.
Thing is.
Yeah, they are. That's why they're suing them, because they are currently using these technologies now.
No, I mean, a lot of these are 3G and stuff like that related patents. This isn't the same thing. The other thing they're not doing is they're not doing the thing that Lotus do, where they pick on small companies who haven't got the financial wherewithal to defend themselves in a long protracted court case and who end up settling out of court.
Yeah, but you've got to suggest
it's not
that,
nice, but it is different.
But you've got to suggest that if Google are genuinely held to be infringing, you're talking about a sizable amount of income from Google's active profits and bank account, and then you're talking about them being your bitch forevermore.
but this is going to take decades to iron out, and they're going to settle at some stage, I'm sure.
Yeah. So there's lots of lawyers rubbing their hands together at this point.
Yeah,
that's the only people that are going to win in this. Definitely. But I totally seconded that the patent system is utterly broken.
Mm-hmm.
World over.
I mean, think about it this way. Samsung lost a big patent lawsuit to Apple. What effect has that had on Samsung's business?
None at all, because they've just died in
court.
Software.
It'll be in court forever. Yeah. And
the business model for all of this is make sure that you're just the legal system, which isn't do, and then you can continue to want. And you roll out new about the whatever you're going to get sued for ends up in court.
Jeff, do bear in mind that the libel laws in the US are completely different from here in the UK, eh?
I just created an international incident, didn't I?
No, you just mean that I'm bankrupt if I publish this podcast. But anyone finds it on Justin. Holy shit.
Sorry.
Thanks, Bart.
Hey, I didn't do. I'm not Jeff.
Yeah, I just fueled it. I'm joking. Thank you, mate. This podcast and all this is brought to you by UK2. We love them. They're stunning. They've got 50% off web hosting for the whole of autumn. 50% off. You'll get half off your bill for any web hosting that you buy from there. Absolutely amazing deal. They're a great firm. We love them to bits. They look after us. Please look after them. And there's great deals out there, 50%. We can't even match that with our codes. Whether you can use the offer code on that as well as, I don't know. If you want to get 50% off, though, go sign up. Please use our portal to get through to them, because that means we get the kudos for sending it, even if you're getting 50% off. They'd love it to bits. And according to them, we do good business. So thank you very much for those. We get no money, we just get support off them. So we do appreciate all the support you give to UK2. We lost without them. Right, it's time for the cool thing, and I'm going to start off with Monsieur Madan. What's your cool thing, dude?
I don't know. Let's think. Let's quickly pick one.
All right, we'll come back if you want.
Batman Arkham Origins.
Have you played it? Because it looks good.
I have a video review of it. I got posted over the weekend. But yeah, it's good. The only downside is if you can play the game quite happily without spending a penny. It just takes a bit of a while. However, it's got two options in there. If you want to buy tokens, Wayne tokens, they call it, or some skill points is the other one. And both of them have an option to spend £69.99.
Oh, dear.
So if you want to buy both sets of these things, it will cost you a mere, what, £140?
Jeez.
Fantastic. Now, that's a cheap iOS game.
That's not good.
But the game's free.
Yeah, righto. That's they've got to sort. That's another thing that's bought.
Fortunately, you don't
in-app purchases.
Need, yeah, you don't need to buy them to play the game. But it scares me the fact that they're there.
Well, if you haven't got your password set up for in-app purchases, that's horrific. You know, you buy Origins for your lad or girl, leave him on the sofa, and 10 minutes later you're 140 quid down.
Yep.
Because you haven't gone through the 15-minute expiry of your password. They've got to sort out in-app purchases. In-app purchases have got to be compulsory password. You can't have the layover password.
They should have a limit as well.
Yeah, you should be able to preset a limit on purchases for the month.
70 quid is ridiculous.
It is. I mean, that's wrong. Utterly wrong. That is, I would get to the point of saying that that is nothing more than freeloading and almost fraud. No, there's no games on the market that are 100...
Libel laws.
No. There are no games on the computer game market that I'm aware of that are £140. Every game that you buy is to a maximum of 60, and you're stupid if you pay 60 because you could probably get it for 40 somewhere online. So to actually have a game in iOS that's 140, you're doing nothing more than exploiting the opportunity for in-app purchases which are not authorised. I'm sorry, that's wrong.
It's a scare. And it's like a big company. It's Warner Brothers as well. So it's a big company.
£180 million, they reckon. $180 million to manufacture Call of Duty Ghosts. And what's it retail for? 52 quid at the moment?
Yeah.
That's whoever that is, I'm calling bullshit on it. There you go.
Well, it's a good game, but don't put the password in and hand it to your kid, whatever you do.
That's exploitation. I'm calling it. That's bullshit. Absolutely. Disgraceful. You should be ashamed of yourself. Up to your room. No tea. Jeffrey, what have you got for us, mate?
I'm going totally with just a fun, simple little game. And I don't know which platforms it's available for. It may only be iOS. Okay. And that is Star Wars Tiny Death Star. And this game, it's been available in Australia, I believe, for a couple of weeks, and it's now branching out to other countries. And it's sort of like a micromanagement game where you have to manage the resources to build a Death Star. And where that could be just a tedious thing, it's done in a lighthearted way, and it's all 8-bit graphics. It feels like an 1980s game. It's just a lot of fun. And you can get it for free. There's in-app purchases where you can buy like power-up things so that you can make stuff happen faster, but you don't actually have to buy anything. And so you can play it I've been playing it on my iPad, but iPhone and iPad for free.
Excellent. And if you'd like to know a review of that game and whether it really is true that what Jeff's saying, you can always go to the review section of the BritishTechNetwork.com site where Paul has already put up a review. There you go. Seconded, I think, from what I read in the review and the fact that Paul's done no frigging work this week.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. I crap myself up. Bart, what have you got for us, mate?
I figured that since there's a shiny big comet coming into our skies in the next month or two, just in time for Christmas, maybe now's a good time to get yourself an astronomy app. And you probably can't do any better than Redshift, which is it's been around forever. Redshift's like ancient, and it keeps getting updated. It's not old software, it's just they are masters at this. And if you have a Mac, you can get it in the Mac App Store for the exceptionally reasonable price of €7.99. Redshift is like the Photoshop of astronomy apps, so for something that good to come in at that price... Actually, sorry, I misread the price. Where's it gone? It's $16.99, not $7.99. And the power features, the really cool stuff like controlling your telescope and stuff, that's in-app purchases. But even that's only €7.99 to buy all of the extra functionality. So basically, you're talking 25 quid for a really great app, and the chances are most people will never need to buy the in-app stuff. Now, one of the really cool features it has is that it can call out to their servers to get up-to-date information on new comets that are discovered. That it will find Comet Ison, which is the comet that's coming into our skies, and then you can track Ison, and then hopefully, if it lives up to the hype, go out and watch it. So, Redshift Astronomy.
Can you get it for Windows 8?
I don't know about Windows 8, but it was a Windows app originally.
I've just... tried to Google for that, and it's come out with something that's... It's the only thing that pisses me off about the Windows 8 community is a lot of people have manufactured apps, and they've called them popular names like Google and that kind of stuff. So when you actually search for them, what you get is not...
The company is United Soft Media, so if it's not from them, it's not real. So USM.
United Soft Media. I shall go and have a look now, then.
Because they're a German company. They have a GmbH at the end instead of a LUT.
Yeah, I've been missing me Star Walk, I have to say. So if that can replace that, then I'm very happy.
Brilliant. Now, this is a Mac app, so...
Yeah, I know.
Oh, so you're when you're talking Windows 8, you mean for your phone, or do you mean for your...
Yeah, for the phone.
Yeah, so you're looking for something to replace... iOS is a great one called Sky Safari.
Sky Walk I've got on iOS, and I loved it, but you can't get it for Windows 8. It's the only program I'm missing, that in Downcast, so... Oh, well. Righty, what have you got for us, bud?
I was going to give you three, but one of them Jeff did much more elegant.
No, don't turn into bloody Will Green, mate. One pick, save the others for another week.
Okay, well, all right, I'll do two, but one really quickly. I got to play with the Nexus 5 this week, and it's a gorgeous phone.
All right.
I really regret getting my iPhone 5. But the other one is the F-bomb map. Seen that?
No.
Basically, I'll drop it in the chat room. Basically, when it's a bit of fun in the office today, if anyone drops the F-bomb in Twitter, it basically geolocates you onto a map.
Ireland is
just
full of
God, that's awesome.
If you even follow my feed today, you'll actually see a lot of expletives in there where I've been trying to get my name up on the map. So I do apologise for anyone who follows me, because I have been dropping it a lot today. But I have been coming up on the map a lot. And it's a real-time map, so anyone wants to go on there, drop them, you'll see yourself geolocated on the map.
Have you got a feed for that? We can watch it online, or...?
Yeah, I've dropped a link in the chat room. It's a live map. You can basically zoom anywhere around the world. So if anyone wants to go on the Twitter now and drop the F-bomb, within minutes you'll find it does it in real time as well. And you can actually click on every link and see which F-bomb they've dropped as well.
How long do these things stay on there? Just for as long as you're on there until you refresh the browser?
Yeah, basically. But it's just great fun to see what people are heffing about, really.
Well, I mean, excusing my pun here, but there's not a fucking lot happening.
Well, apparently America...
No, I'm seeing a lot of F-bombs dropping. America's
the most potty-mouthed nation in the world. I've got up now. I've had 37 in the last 20 seconds here. Scotland, here we go. Obviously, I can't repeat what they say. No, I can't repeat that. I certainly can't repeat that. All that. I really can't repeat that. But, you know, got a bit of a laugh from the office, you know. It's a bit of fun with Twitter.
It sounds just a tad NSFW to me.
I set up filters, so I don't get swear words on Twitter anymore.
Well, I've been on for a while now, I have to say, and I haven't got hardly any. I'm just trying to get me feed up here to show you, but there's not a lot. I would have expected in a few minutes for it to be absolutely smothered. But there's less than 50 on here since we started talking about it.
I'll tell you what, it's more smothered around about 9 o'clock in the morning when people are going to work than it is when probably at 9 o'clock at 9 people are having a drink. People are more peed off on at 9 in the morning going to work. It's a laugh. So.
No, yes, I do believe it is a laugh. That's all right, fair enough. But if I was to just I'm trying to show it here on the podcast, it takes me a few minutes. Hang on, I'm useless. But it won't let me add it, bastard. There we go. Oh, it will. No, there we go. There we go. So there's the feed on my computer at the moment, and since we started talking, that's all there's been. Australia hasn't sworn once.
No, not at all.
And Pete from Windrider comes there.
Are they not asleep?
So that's bollocks. No, it's 8:30 in the morning there. According to Paul's anecdotal survey, they should be swearing like Billy O.
Yeah, give him half an hour.
That's a bit of fun, isn't it?
Well, I mean, there's a high density around Washington where Bronwyn lives, so that would account for something.
Yeah, how about that?
And Bronwyn, by self-admission, swears like a sailor on groat. There you go. That's it. I'll move my hand out of the way. That's it. Oh, there was quite a lot then. Two in California. Three in California. One in Nevada.
I think you're going in the middle of the water.
Someone on a boat, I would say. Unless it's Cuba, I suppose. Or a West Indian.
They're off now. Look, here they go.
They're getting there. It's improving. I'll leave it on and we'll have a quick look again before the end of the show. But my cool thing is a podcast. And I've because I haven't got Downcast, I've used a thing called Podcast Lounge. And Podcast Lounge lets me visually look through podcasts that are provided by providers that are registered with them, one of which is the BBC. And I found a couple of podcasts that I didn't know existed. They were Radio 4 programmes. And the one I want to recommend is China, A History, As History Is My Witness. There's about 20 podcasts there to go through. And they're done by a lady that's really easy to listen to. I can't remember her name now. I want to say Claire, but it's not Claire. It begins with a G. And they're really insightful. They're all about the history and how China is the way it currently is because of what's gone on in its past. And there's some great voice acting that goes on. They do some wonderful bits with like kids and games and that kind of thing to try and explain it. And actually, there's a bit in the last episode where you talked to where the guy just says China is the way it is because that's the way it was. Even though it's gone from imperialism to communism, there's an awful lot of the culture of the country has remained because there's so many parallels between the way the imperialism was done and the way that the communism's done. And I have been absolutely transfixed by it. I get a lot of podcasts to listen to on the train and in the car. And I've listened to every one of these back-to-back until I've finished them. So I can't recommend it highly enough. China, As History Is My Witness from the BBC. It's a podcast that you can download. And all the episodes are currently online, so you won't miss anything. Well worth it. There you go. And it's free, of course. Where can we get a hold of you, Mr. Madden?
You can get hold of me on Twitter, not dropping the F-bomb, at Glorzio101.
There's the F-bomb map at the moment. And it's still not filling. America, damn you, swear there.
But there's a lot of
we're under a lot of stress, okay?
Yeah, okay. There we go. You got guns.
They're trying to get healthcare, that's the problem.
Yeah, they're state-sponsored free swears. There's only one in Canada, look. Oh, no, there's one up there. That must be Kelly in Portland.
Well, yeah, if there's one in Canada, it's either Jim Dalrymple or one of us is up over on their side of the border.
Yeah, what about proxy? Could be proxy, see?
Okay, that's an option too.
Yeah, exactly. There we go. Excellent. Jeff, where are you, sir?
You can find me at macobserver.com and on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet at both of those places. And you can find me on a bunch of podcasts, Apple Context Machine. We have Communicators right here on The Big Show and on The Comic Show. And, I kind of get around. Oh, and Fresh Brewed Tales. Go to Fresh Brewed Tales where I talk about the stupid things I see people do in coffee shops.
Excellent, mate. Yes, it's a good blog, that one. Well worth watching. Mr. Bouchots, where are you, sir?
Easiest thing is to go to bartb.ie, which is my personal site where you'll find links to my photography and my doohickeys and my whatnots. But in particular, I want to plug my new podcast series, which is called Let's Talk Podcast. There's an Apple show every month, and there's a photography show every month. Just two a month. You know, I don't want to overload people.
Excellent, mate. Very good. There's a gap in your podcasting life. Fill it with those.
So it's let's-talk. Let me say that right. Let's-talk.ie.
Excellent, mate. Good pick. We like those. Go there and give him a go. And you can also get him at BelgianIrish.com.
Sometime when I register that to me, unless someone else has who is listening in the live show.
They will. They'll gift it to you, mate. We've got a wonderful, fabulous, generous bunch here. You'll be fine. And last but by no means least, Righty.
Hi, mate.
Didn't pay the electrical bill this week, then.
Forgive me at Paulins and, as ever, faithfully writing for the British Tech Network.
Very good, mate. Fantastic reviews. We love them.
Thank you, mate.
Well done, mate. We'll be back in next week, Thursday at the moment, as far as we know. Who's coming on? Ah! Who knows? Oh, man. I love doing this show. See you next week. Thanks for listening.